Gertrude and Alice were creating and recreating their lesbian relationship before and during the first two world wars. Afterwards, Gertrude wrote to Alice, "I love you so much more, every war, more and more and more and more."
I think it's great for a gay person to go see a movie and to watch it surrounded by a lot of straight people, and they seem to really get into it.
Hello, Gay Helpline, how may I help you?
Parents are gonna kill me if I tell them I'm a fag, but I can't go on this way.
You don't have to tell them.
But this is killing me.
Then tell them.
But then they're gonna kill me.
Well, then you got nothing to lose, because either way you'll end up dead, right? Hello?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Olympics welcomes transsexuals, but the Gay Games bids Montreal adieu, a literary look at the marriage of Mr. Stein and Mrs. Toklas, and a queer Canadian filmmaker's Italian family comedy, Mambo's into Australia. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinger.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 15th, 2003. For the first time, transsexuals will be able to qualify to compete in next year's Olympics in Athens, the International Olympic Committee told the Associated Press this week. IOC Medical Director Patrick Shamash declared, "We will have no discrimination. The IOC will respect human rights." That's a big turnaround from the Olympics' decades of controversial sex tests, which were finally dropped for the 2000 Olympics in Sydney. While no transsexuals are currently known to be candidates for the Olympics' historic return to Greece, some international sports groups had sought guidance on the issue, leading the IOC to convene a meeting of medical experts last month. Details are still being worked out, and the final rules are expected before the end of the year, but Shamash indicated that there will be some kind of waiting period after sex reassignment surgery before an athlete can qualify. The same standards will be applied to trans men as to trans women, although the primary concern in the past has been that trans women might have an unfair edge competing against biological women. No indication has yet been given as to how the Olympics will handle intersexed athletes or transgenders who have not had surgery.
Although the term Olympics has been widely used in the names of diverse competitions among various groups and even animals, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling prevented its use by what's had to be known ever since as the Gay Games. And while the mainstream Olympics that brought that lawsuit is now seeking to become more open to transsexuals, the International Gay Games are now in crisis. All ties have been severed between the official international organizing body, the Federation of Gay Games, and local organizers in Montreal, the city the Federation chose 2 years ago to host the seventh Gay Games in 2006. As a result, it's quite possible there will be two separate major international lesbian, gay, and trans sports gatherings, and there are threats of lawsuits.
Since its San Francisco founding more than 20 years ago, the Games have grown to become big business, attracting well over 10,000 lesbi, gay, and trans competitors, many thousands more spectators, and millions in tourism dollars. Groups make a significant investment just to prepare bids for their cities to host the quadrennial event. The Federation of Gay Games was charging a licensing fee of nearly $1 million Canadian dollars for the use of its trademarked logo and name by 2006 host Montreal. But the Federation is deeply concerned that that name could become a synonym for red ink, as its last four games all ended with increasingly large debts. The 1998 games in Amsterdam closed about $1 million U.S. dollars short of expenses, and earlier this year, the organizers of the 2002 games in Sydney went into voluntary liquidation, with debts totaling about $1.5 million U.S. dollars. Those problems were attributed in large part to lower-than-projected participation. The Federation has been demanding that Montreal organizers cut back by more than half their original plans for the seventh edition, and apparently hasn't been satisfied by Montreal's counteroffer of 16,000 participants and a budget of $16 million Canadian dollars.
Montreal organizers, the group named Montreal 2006, are proud of having obtained unprecedented government funding from the city, Quebec province, and Canada, as well as some early corporate support and a broadcast deal, which together have already insured about a third of the funds they need. Given their city's easy accessibility for the large U.S. contingent compared to Sydney and Amsterdam, they were confident they could reach their targets. They do not feel they could give the Federation the kind of control it sought to exert over their financial management, particularly since the Federation was seeking to approve all expenditures without taking on any legal, administrative, or fundraising responsibilities.
The long-running argument reached a head this last weekend as the Federation held its annual meeting in Chicago, including marathon negotiations with Montreal organizers. The outcome was Montreal leaving the Federation and the Federation reopening its bidding process to find a new host for the seventh Games. Yet Montreal remains committed to staging its 2006 event. It's not likely the two events will go on at the same time. In fact, the Federation's official Gay Games could well be delayed until 2007 to give adequate preparation time to the new host, which will almost certainly be a U.S. city. But many athletes won't be able to afford to participate in two international gatherings and will have to make a choice. Montreal organizers also need to make a choice of a new name that isn't Gay Games. The group's website is currently referring to the Rendezvous Games, but since they're outside the jurisdiction of the U.S. Supreme Court, perhaps Montreal should consider a return to the term Olympics.
Pride events this month included parades in Buenos Aires and Adelaide. The Queensland, Australia event was notable as the first march there since 1973, with about 1,000 participants. The Argentine event, Buenos Aires 12th, had some 4,000 people. Police intervened when some marchers spray-painted the Roman Catholic Metropolitan Cathedral with messages including, "Church equals dictatorship," while chanting, "Here is the repression of the Holy Inquisition." One activist told reporters the attack was directed not at the faith, but at the church's meddling in politics.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops can be expected to be meddling more in politics. After voting 234-3 at its annual meeting in Washington, D.C. this week, to adopt a declaration against opening civil marriage to gays and lesbians. The document is called Between Man and Woman, Questions and Answers about Marriage and Same-Sex Unions, and it will be distributed to parishes nationally for the stated purpose of enabling Catholics to defend marriage. It says that legal recognition of same-gender couples would grant official public approval to homosexual activity and would treat it as if it were morally neutral, and that it contradicts the nature of marriage, which it defines as a lifelong union of a man and a woman. It urges Catholics to oppose as immoral both homosexual acts and unjust discrimination against homosexual persons. The bishops assert that it is not unjust to deny legal status to same-sex unions because marriage and same-sex unions are essentially different realities, particularly in that gay and lesbian sex does not result in procreation. The activist group Soul Force, an interfaith organization which seeks equal treatment for gays and lesbians in all denominations, was once again a visible presence demonstrating outside the meeting. Many participants viewed the document as a political act in itself, a stealth attempt to stir up support for the proposed federal marriage amendment to prohibit same-gender marriages in the U.S.
But the gubernatorial veto of a similar so-called defense of marriage bill in Wisconsin withstood an override attempt this week. The Wisconsin Assembly fell just one vote short of the two-thirds majority required from both houses to override a veto. The bill had originally passed the House with more than two-thirds support, but four Democrats who'd voted in favor of the bill voted against overriding the veto by Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. It was revealed this week that the Doyle administration is working to extend spousal health coverage to the domestic partners of Wisconsin state employees, regardless of gender.
The North Dakota State Supreme Court this week opened the way for gay and lesbian parents to win custody of their children after divorcing heterosexual spouses, even if they live with a same-gender partner. The justices unanimously reversed a 1981 decision by the same court, declaring that the possibility of anti-gay prejudice from other people is not in itself inherently harmful to children or a valid reason to deny custody. The current case was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of Valerie Damron. Her husband, Sean Damron, had agreed at the time of their divorce in 2001 that she would raise their two daughters. Valerie and the girls went on to live together with her partner, Ann Elliott. A year after the divorce, Sean sued for custody, declaring that the couple provided the wrong moral character for the girls. But the state's high court found that Sean would have to present actual evidence that the living situation was harmful to the children's physical or emotional health or development, and that he had not done so. In fact, Sean himself admitted that the older girl was doing very well and that he'd seen no evidence of harm to the younger one.
And finally, a kiss is just a kiss, but it can sure make a difference where you do it. Greek TV stations, like so many around the world, repeatedly showed the notorious MTV Video Music Awards smooch between Madonna and Britney Spears. Yet it was reported this week that Greece's National Radio and Television Council slapped the private mega television station with a fine of 100,000 euros for broadcasting a drama including a kiss between two male actors. Inevitably, this led a score or so of lesbigays and transgenders to hold a kiss in, protesting the fine.
In the lunchroom at River Hill High School in Clarksville, Maryland this month, students Stephanie Hauser and Catherine Picor climbed atop a table, shouted, "Stop homophobia!" and spent the next 10 to 15 seconds in a lip lock. Hauser claimed she was carrying out an English class assignment to perform a nonconformist act a la Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau. The school administration responded with a 2-day suspension for both teens, although they also got a moment in the national media spotlight. The Washington Post headline began, "Girls' Bus Causes Fuss."
And when Swedish lesbians Anna Fernström and Susanne Gustafsson kissed in a Stockholm restaurant, owner Aziz Kakir told them to leave. He insists he'd have done the same had a heterosexual couple been making out in his eatery. But prosecutors have charged him with sexual orientation discrimination, and if he's found guilty, he could face as much as a year behind bars.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 15th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
Maria, what are you two doing here, huh?
We live here.
Our Australian correspondent chats with a gay French-Canadian filmmaker about his cinematic Italian family later in the program. Long-term relationship between lesbian literati Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas has certainly never been a secret, but This Way Out correspondent Janet Mason did have just a moment's hesitation about delving into the domestic details.
There's something potentially embarrassing about the intimacies of lovers. Think about it. Has your lover ever called you by your pet name in public? It was with some trepidation then that I looked between the covers of Baby Precious, Always Shine, selected love notes between Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas. Edited by Kay Turner and published by the Stonewall imprint of St. Martin's Press, this book brings together for the first time a collection of private notes passed between Gertrude and Alice, the two women who had the distinction of being the most famous lesbian couple of the 20th century. Reading the book from cover to cover gave me the sense of looking through a keyhole into the everyday intimacies that made up the marriage of Gertrude and Alice. Gertrude was the husband, the hubby, and Alice was her wifey, her wife, her precious baby. Their partnership lasted for 39 years, from 1907 until Gertrude's death in 1946. The legal benefits of marriage continue to be denied to lesbians and gay men. But at the same time, this covenant cannot be denied. In Gertrude Stein's words, it happened very simply that they were married. They were naturally married. Gertrude Stein, sometimes referred to as the mother of modernism, has often been misunderstood. Her writing, with its use of repetition and unusual word patterns, is not nonsense, as some would have us believe, or the result of a psychological condition. Stein used language itself to break apart the conventions of literature and thought. In other words, instead of portraying reality, the words are their own reality. Gertrude and Alice did the same thing in the creation and recreation of their marriage. While some feminists criticized Gertrude and Alice for what they saw as an imitation of role-bound heterosexual unions, others such as Joan Nessel, defined butch femme relations as complex erotic statements, not phony heterosexual replicas. These love notes from Gertrude and Alice are also complex erotic statements. They are missives of domestic lesbian life, and they are also art. As Alice wrote to Gertrude, notes are a very beautiful form of literature. And Gertrude herself has called some of these notes poems. They are lesbian love poems that would have been published as such had the world been more accepting. Consider, for instance, the following. Dear Mrs., I take my pen in hand to congratulate you, dear Mrs., on the extremely promising husband you have. He promises everything, and he means it, too. He did not mean it. He means it. The darling. This ejaculation refers to Mrs., not to Mr., as might be erroneously supposed. Mrs. is the fountain of all good, all beauty, and all sweetness. Mrs. is a graceful fountain, and she plays over Mr., who is certain that Mrs. is a grateful fountain, which means that it is grateful to Mr. to have Mrs. play over him. Mr. is so grateful. Dear Mrs., lovingly yours, Mr. This could make a case for the fact that there is little, if anything, that is new, including the debate over female ejaculation and the radical deconstruction of gender. On the other hand, it could also lead us to the fact that these things are always new. Gertrude and Alice were creating and recreating their lesbian relationship before and during the first two world wars. Both Jewish and lesbian, they could have been killed for either of these identities. Both Gertrude and Alice were Americans who emigrated to France as young women. They were among the lucky ones who went into hiding during World War II and survived. Afterwards, Gertrude wrote to Alice, I love you so much more, every war, more and more and more and more. This collection can be read as literature in itself and also as insight into Gertrude Stein's great body of work. Ultimately, as the editors note in the introduction, these notes disclose the intimacies of a deeply committed, very rare, and at the same time very ordinary marriage. Near the end of her life, Gertrude Stein wrote in a libretto about the life of feminist Susan B. Anthony, What is marriage? Is marriage protection or religion? Is marriage renunciation or abundance? Is marriage a stepping stone or an end? What is marriage? As I flip through these notes, once passed between Gertrude and Alice, it occurs to me that marriage might at times be a sentence, but it can also be a question. With commentary on Baby Precious Always Shines, selected love notes between Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas from St. Martin's Press, and with thanks to Deborah D'Alessandro for production assistance, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
Clive Barker.
This is Janice Ian.
I'm B.D. Wong.
I'm Kate Clinton.
I'm Armistead Maupin.
This is Dorothy Allison.
A summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community.
The Supreme Court says that we matter and we're valuable.
It says intended bridegroom and intended bride.
How are
intended spouse and intended spouse?
My name is Billy Bean.
This is Greg Louganis.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren.
This is Edmund White.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
This is Ian McKellen.
I'm Amanda Burst.
I'm Bruce Valanche.
I'm Lucia Chappell.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
Inviting you to join us for This Way Out, your weekly dose of international queer news and culture in the oral tradition.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you.
To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain,
or for audio cassette subscription information,
please visit our website at thiswayout.org,
email us at tworadio@aol.com,
or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
Thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out.
Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. A gay-themed film targeted at general audiences is dancing its way around the world. In fact, Mambo Italiano, written by Steve Galluccio and Emile Goudreau and directed by Goudreau, broke box office records in their native Canada and delighted audiences in the U.S. before setting sail for silver screens down under. From Brisbane to Montreal, This Way Out's John Frame chats with Goudreau about the movie's intercultural success.
How do you think our parents would react if I were to tell them that I'm a...
A what?
You know,
a fag.
Hey, shh. What is so wrong with living at home until you get married?
This is gonna kill them. Tell them.
Why is Nino a better roommate than us, eh?
Yeah, why?
Because Nino's my lover.
Ah! Emile Goudreau, welcome to This Way Out.
It's my pleasure.
Mambo Italiano. It's the sort of film that a wide range of people will enjoy.
When I was doing the movie, Steve Galluccio, the writer, and I, we always wanted to do a mainstream comedy. So it was always the objective to for that movie to be shown to a wide audience, you know, mm-hmm. to have a movie with a gay protagonist surrounded by a lot of people, a lot of straight characters who are funny, and to make that movie accessible. And to make it fun to watch for a gay audience and straight audience. And that was fun because that's what happened here. I went to see the movie, and there were a mix of people in it, and I think it's good. I think it's great for a gay person to go see a movie with a gay protagonist and to watch it surrounded by a lot of straight people, and they seem to really get into it. They seem to be really enjoy it, and they respond to it. So I think it's a good experience. It's fun.
You ready?
No.
Yes, you are. Go.
Hello, Gay Helpline. How may I help you?
My parents are going to kill me if I tell them I'm a fag, but I can't go on this way.
You don't have to tell them.
But this is killing me.
Then tell them.
But then they're gonna kill me.
Well, then you got nothing to lose, because either way you'll end up dead, right? Hello?
On the practical side of what the film says to people, in terms of issues, each person, each gay person, gay or lesbian in the world, really has to work out for themselves when and how it's appropriate to break the news to their parents. Mm-hmm. But in Mambo Italiano, when the parents react with shock, that is a real reaction that happens with plenty of parents. Sometimes you need to give parents a period of time to adjust. But it is good to have telephone counseling lines that can help people in the meantime to get support. And I think that it's valuable that the film will let a lot of viewers realize that these services exist, because
that's
they are
true.
Life-saving.
As it wasn't in our mind when we did that, because for us it was first a way to for the actor, the other character, to talk about himself and to know him better. We thought it was a fun way and a fast way and in a way easy way to have the actor, the character talk about himself. But I guess you're right. And because I was a volunteer in a gay line like that for a couple of years, I know the importance of those lines, and I know it can be, in a way, sometimes it can really save lives,
yep.
Literally. Some of the calls we have in those lines are so dramatic. It's kind of, because sometimes we have the impression that we live in a really easy gay world because of the other people that surround us, and, you know, we live in big cities with gay village, but the reality, it's still not that easy for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I think a line like that, it's really good, just for the fact that those people, they talk to a gay person, knowing that person is gay. For some people, it's the first gay person that they talk to. So only that, and a person that is caring and that's listening to them with compassion, only that, it's such a big thing for those people. In Montreal, gay line, I had a lot of phone calls from son and daughters of immigrants living in Montreal and Quebec. And for them, it was extremely difficult to make their coming out. For some of them, it was just impossible. And I thought it was very interesting. It's a reality that we're rarely seeing. So I was thinking when I was reading the play, I think that this story needs to be seen. And I think that makes the movie contemporary in a way that. Other coming out story, you know, we've seen a lot of coming out story, but we've never seen that coming out story and all those people, where they're coming from, how it affects the way they think, the way they see the world. So for Steve and I, we said, you know, I think we need to show that story.
Gino, Maria, what are you two doing here, huh?
We live here.
It's set and filmed on location in Little Italy, in Montreal.
Yeah.
So are local Italians in Montreal happy with it?
Yes, yes, for them it's fun to see themselves on screen because they rarely see that. You know, they've seen Italian, American Italian, they've seen a lot of mafia type of movie, but it's fun for them to see. I think it's very important. That's why I think it's very important for gay people too, to see ourselves as protagonists in movies. You know. And I think for the Italian community in Montreal, it was fun to see themselves. Of course, when you do a comedy like that, there's a little percentage of the people who are kind of, we're not like that. Like any comedy you will do about any group, you have people who don't see themselves like that. And some of the people will say to us, you know, you could have go farther because you toned it down. So the reaction was good because they really get it. They get little jokes that are in the movie that nobody else gets in a way, you know, just to see themselves, and it makes them laugh to recognize themselves. So that was good for us.
Well, whatever you say, I just hope he finds himself a nice Italian girl.
He won't find himself a nice Italian girl. He's gay.
Nobody is gayer than my son.
Yes. And he's got a new boyfriend.
A gorgeous man.
Loves Angelo to death.
I should love my wife the way he loves Angelo.
You know right from the very start that this film has been made with gay men involved, that there's been no compromise made here to try to titillate or to apologize. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very empowering. And it's been a long time since I've seen a film that's so entertaining and so honestly gay.
Oh, thank you. You know, we worked very hard to do that, to make that movie a movie that that will be, as you said, honest and at the same time entertaining, because we've seen so many straight movies, you know, with straight audience, with sometimes gay characters in it, but most of the time those gay characters are support characters. Or we see ourselves on very good but independent movie in specialized theaters or on cable. Or we see ourselves, you know, as characters who make people laugh. But in Mambo Italiano, what we did, I think it's fun, is that we have the protagonist, Angelo, is not that funny. He has dreams, he wants to be happy, and the straight people around him are funny, you know. And usually it's kind of the straight people are more serious, and you have the gay character who is very funny. So we really worked hard to try to find the right balance, and, you know, I hope the gay audience will appreciate it.
This has been John Frame from 4ZZZ Brisbane for This Way Out, speaking with Emile Goudreau, director and co-writer of Canadian film Mambo Italiano.
Hi, this is Ron Nyswaner. I'm the author of Soldier's Girl in Philadelphia.
Todd Graff, the writer-director of the film Camp.
Kristen Corey, I'm the director of a film called Friends and Family.
I'm Richard Day, the director of Girls Will Be Girls.
I'm Nancy Cates. I'm the co-director and co-producer of Brother Outsider, The Life of Byron Rustin.
Hi, I'm Marco Filiberti, the writing director and first actor in Little More Than a Year Ago.
I'm Linda Goodbryant, co-producer and director of Flag Wars.
Paul Kolishman, I'm the president of Here Entertainment.
I'm Bill Condon, recently wrote the screenplay for Chicago.
And I'm Steve Pride, inviting you to join This Way Out in 2 weeks when we take a look at gay pride on screen in 2003.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinger, Graham Underhill, Fensbury, Rex Walkner, Janet Mason, John Frame, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle and Deborah D'Alessandro. Lynn Thomas performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Dade City Community Radio, Miami-Dade, Florida, KVSC St. Cloud, Minnesota, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, and we know you'll stay tuned.